1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show. Your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the show. Ed Marlowe joins me today via phone. Ed is on the road. Went to Lexington. And, Ed, I guess you went to see Kentucky play and then found out they're on the road. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I got all the way to the front door of Rupp Arena and realized that they were in South Carolina.
Oh, so, golly.
No, right. Tough break. But, no, I came up here to say fairly well. I'll see you again to former sports editor of the Paducah Sun, Mike Stunson. Obviously a good friend of mine and a good friend to Western Kentucky Athletics and the state of Kentucky's news cycle over the last few years. And he and his wife have taken new jobs near Washington, D.C. and in Washington, D.C. And I wish them well.
So, all right,
yeah,
cool.
Up here for a quick hello and then on my way back for some Murray State basketball.
Before we got on the air, and we will talk plenty of Racer basketball, we talk about a former Racer player. You watched some, I don't know how much, but I watched some last night of Ja Morant. I knew it'd be tough. It's going to be tough. You know, you got the Houston Rockets. They're really good. You know, hopefully they can stay in the game. Yeah, they did stay in the game. They beat them last night, and Ja Morant was terrific. I think the fans really buzzing about his step-back three in the face of James Harden. It's just amazing what this youngster is doing, and he's about halfway through his rookie season. In Memphis, if we stopped it right now, they're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's really crazy, Neil. So the funny thing is, you know, first of all, I was just hoping – I knew I was going to Lexington anyways, but I saw the news come out early in the morning that Russ was going to get rested, Russell Westbrook, you know, Morant's favorite player and idol growing up. And I was like, dang it, I was really hoping to see some Russ versus Ja social media tonight. I mean, you know, I guess it's tough to say that it's a second-place social media event when it's Russ versus, you know, James Harden,
right?
Former MVP, two former MVPs, in fact. But first of all, what a show. I mean, his first quarter and his fourth quarter were absolutely electric. And then he had a 5-assist second quarter. It just, I mean, unbelievable performance. Neil, 3-for-4 from three. His only miss was a three-pointer. 10-for-11 from the field. I know they like to come up with stats. I get it. That's what ESPN Stats and Info and the NBA.com statisticians are for. But Morant is the first rookie in NBA history to shoot 90%, score more than 25 points, dish out more than 8 assists. That's crazy, man. Like, and I understand that that's kind of got some, that's a very specific stat. And it's like, well, you know, I'm the first man to drive on the West Kentucky Parkway with only two fingers on the steering wheel and, you know, looking out of my left eye over to the right shoulder. Like, I get that that's very specific, but it's an electric performance. And you could hear it through the TV and through your phone, if you were watching it and live streaming it, Neil. Memphis was on fire with that performance last night. It's their sixth straight win. It's the third longest winning streak in the NBA, not just the Western Conference. They are 19-22. They are a half game back of the, like, kind of in that 7-8 seed range. They are in the playoffs right now if it ends tomorrow. And at the midway point, you're thinking, you know, you thought Memphis would be fun. You thought Memphis would be talented but young and raw. You didn't think Memphis would be competitive. And, Neil, now there are people talking about, well, man, what if Andre Iguodala actually stayed and suited up for this team? And I still think they'll probably trade him before the deadline because there's too many offers out there from legitimate contenders. And again, I don't want to put Memphis in the legitimate contender conversation. Like, let's be realistic here.
Sure.
They're not a one seed or a two seed, and they'll have to play somebody like that in the first round, even if they keep winning this way. But man, like, you think about what the last 2 or 3 weeks of January have been. Neil, I mean, they are literally a bad fourth quarter in Sacramento away from a 7-0 start to 2020. Like, they're on fire. Morant's on fire. In the month of January, he's shooting 61% from the field and 44% from the three-point line.
Wow.
Unbelievable. He's 22 of 25 from the charity stripe. He's averaging a 2-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. And by the way, he's averaging 9 assists per game right now in January through 7 games. I mean, he's literally finding, you can see it in the numbers and the way he's attacking the basket and the way that he's getting his teammates involved. He's starting to find that next level. And again, he's only played less than 41 games. He's not even played all the games Memphis has been in this year. He had to sit that 10-day stretch. Last night, he played the most minutes he's played this season, 37. And that's including the overtime win against the Brooklyn Nets earlier this year. Their first win of the season, first home win. So it's just, man, like, it's crazy to think that this young man, this 20-year-old, who blossomed in front of our eyes at the college level, is really kind of starting to take on that superstar effect at the NBA. Granted, there's a lot of basketball hopefully left this season for them and for himself and for his career, but this is a terrific start, and I know a lot of Racer fans are watching it closely.
Well, the good news is the Memphis Grizzlies, they have John Morant. The bad news is the Racers don't have, yet here we are, same spot they were after 4 games last year, 4-0 in the OVC, tied for first, and last week did something they hadn't done in several years. They won both games on that Jacksonville State-Tennessee Tech road trip. A thriller at Jacksonville State, great defense throughout, and then against Tennessee Tech, they had an amazing run, had to withstand a run, and then held off Tennessee Tech with, all in all, a pretty good night, especially when it comes to taking care of the ball.
Yeah, it really was. I really want to start with that JSU game because that was as billed as I thought. I told a lot of people, I said, you really, you know, we were all kind of looking in the non-conference slate, Neil, and I know we were all talking about it, and you looked at JSU's 2-7 start, a loss to Alabama A&M, which is, you know, probably going to be a little bit better this year than usual, but still, you know, you saw some tough losses. Excuse me, sneezing. It's the weather is this season. My apologies, but you take a look at, you know, you take a look at JSU's 2-7 start to the season, and you're like, man, that's, you know, a lot of new pieces. You know, Ray Harper had a lot of guys graduate: Christian Cunningham, Jason Brunell, Marlon Hunter, some super talented dudes that, you know, really, really powered their team for the last couple of years. So there's some growing pains there, but man, they're good now. Absolutely, you know, they're terrific defensively. Especially at the arc, did a really good job shooting the three-pointer over that 5-game winning stretch. The two teams clashed between Murray and Jacksonville State. We got a great game. You know, I mean, there are so many different things you can talk about that game. The first 5 minutes of each half, I thought, belonged to Damon Robinson. His slam dunk to open the game, basically that second basket on the pass from Javion Eaves, the slip pass and the dunk. I called that. I don't know if you called it this on radio, but I called it in my story. I called it the Alabama Slammer.
Ah.
Holy moly, what a shot. And, I mean, that was just a lot of confidence from a freshman, you know, playing in his home state. And then Tevin Brown, I thought the shot of the game obviously came at the top of the key. He hits that three-pointer to basically make it a dagger. I know JSU's pressure, as it did for a lot of the second half, got to the Racers in that final minute and a half to close the gap. But, I mean, Tevin Brown was absolutely terrific at Jacksonville State. And, you know, and then they carried that over to Tech. You know, not only did they start off super, super quick out to that big lead, 27-7 in the first half against Tech, but then they were able to withstand another three-point barrage from a team that did a really good job picking apart that outside, you know, defense. But then you look at the offensive efficiency. For as good as the defense was against Jacksonville State, it was the offense that was virtually perfect against Tennessee Tech. You know, the three didn't particularly fall, but that's okay because the inside game basically roasted Tennessee Tech from inside. They were so effective in the paint that they didn't need to hit the threes because they were able just to attack in transition and really attack underneath the basket. So two different styles of winning, but winning is winning. It doesn't matter how you do it. And really, really big. Now you're 4-0. With Austin Peay, which got a great comeback performance against Jacksonville State earlier on Saturday.
Yeah, Austin Peay playing really well. They're getting a terrific play out of a pair of freshmen. One of those named the Freshman of the Week, Carlos Paez, and Jordan Adams have been the one getting all the accolades, but Paez made 70% from three range, so they certainly have the offense going. You had Terry Taylor and those two freshmen in the mix and it is something for Austin Peay. And yet they had to dig out of a hole at Jacksonville State, down 19 at one point, came back and won. So it looks like old times with Murray State and Austin Peay at the top of the standings, and both heading out on the road this week at UT Martin and at Southeast Missouri. And UT Martin, Ed, they have been really, really good at home. They beat Tennessee State, and they gave Belmont all they wanted before the Bruins were able to pull away at the end.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. I mean, I don't want to say that this is the kind of game that, like, scares me, because it's wins and losses. I mean, it all comes together. But, I mean, if you're the Racers, this is certainly going to be a testy environment. I know UT Martin is only 1-3. In OVC play, but you're exactly right, Neil. They had, I believe they were up on Belmont at the under four. You know,
yeah.
This is a team that can score with the best of them. This is a UT Martin that scored, 76 points at Murray State 2 weeks ago. It's a very quick turnaround. No doubt Parker Stewart, Quentin Dove, Paul Thorne, they're all playing really, really good basketball right now. And I wouldn't necessarily say this is a trendy upset pick. I don't know. I just know that Murray State really, this isn't a game you can really kind of just walk into and expect to be a victory. I don't mean that like that sounds, but you know what I'm saying, Neil? Like, that, this is
yeah.
the type of game where, like, you've got to really be locked in to your to a lot of your different principles if you're going to come away with a road win against UT Martin. Good thing is, you came away with two last week, so now you know what it takes. Your first two official true road wins for the season, so to maintain that 4-0 pressure. So, I mean, you're exactly right. Austin Peay's got to deal with the same slate, but you'd love to come away with another critical road win against UT Martin, and it, I mean, it would be big. It would bury Martin in the standings if they were going to fall to 1-4 in league play. They know that. The Racers know that. Just a lot of things to really think about there. When it comes to the matchup, I'm really looking forward to it. I feel like every matchup at UT Martin is a special one, but this one especially can be a difference maker at the start of the season, just with the way the standings are shaking up. I mean, you've only got two left that are undefeated. If you can manage to be the one still remaining, that's all the more games you'll have ahead of you for the one or the two seed toward the end of the season.
Martin is also... I added Steve Wooten back from a knee injury. He's starting for them, averages about 7 points, 7 rebounds per game, so gives them a big lift.
Yeah, it really does. And he's been a key reason they've been able to stay kind of in contention, really. I mean, the Belmont game was right at that threshold. Where if UT Martin makes a couple of shots, Belmont falls to second loss in OVC play. So, it doesn't matter. That's semantics now, and Belmont was able to come away with that victory. But that's how good UT Martin has been. Now, the tough part about it is, Neil, defensively, I think UT is still kind of struggling in that department.
Oh, yeah.
You take a look, they're still yielding about 50% from the field, 42% from three, but they've been able to just score in bunches. And but if they ever figure out how to get consistent stops, they're a team to be reckoned with. So it'll just be really interesting to see how Thursday night shakes out between the two teams.
And then on to SEMO. That is a team really struggling. They're a little bit better defensively than UT Martin, but they have very little depth. Do have some talent. If you don't defend them, yeah, they can put up some points. But it looks like a long year for Southeast Missouri. Of course, anytime you play a team on their home court, they can always spring the upset. But this doesn't look like a team that – this looks like one of the teams that probably will not even make the tournament, at least in my mind.
Well, and it's possible. I will say the two – I like Isaiah Gable a lot. I like Alex Caldwell. I like Skylar Hogan. I think there's some pieces there that Rick Ray can build around. I really do. And they're all young and growing. I believe it. I think aren't they all sophomores?
Yeah, a lot of young. And Tolbert, you know, good guy.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was fixing to say. I think Rick's got some pieces, some youth, but you're exactly right. Depth is a real concern. Once those guys hit the bench, there just isn't a ton of help at the moment. But again, you got to stay locked in. The road is tough in the OVC, and the minute that you slip, and you're not focused, you know, is the minute you lose a tough one. I don't want to say that they slipped and lost focus against Tech. I know Tech has really struggled this year, but they've been able to come away, you know, with some really big scoring barrages against a lot of different teams. And, again, had that road win at Winthrop. I don't care what their record is. Put up 91 points at Winthrop, you know, a team that made the NCAA tournament last year. So you knew that at some point the Racers were going to have to weather some sort of a storm at the Eblen Center, and it just so happened that they got it done. You know, they were able to kind of lock up Junior Clay late. Tevin Brown hit a couple of really big threes in the second half to create some separation, and the Racers were able to come away with another road win. So it's just, you know, you want to maintain that same type of focus. That's what I was getting at. You get to SEMO. Man, Neil, you and I have seen some great games at the Show Me Center.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. You know, anything can happen. You've just got to stay focused and lock in because it's OVC play, and you want to come away with a league win. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the Racers come away with whatever they come away with in these two matchups this week.
Racer women, they are 1-3. They have a really brutal road trip. Although they beat SEMO at home, it took one of their best games of the season to do so. For UT Martin, they were absolutely smothered, but they're coming off a week where, I mean, I saw Jacksonville State. They didn't look real good there, but then against Tennessee Tech, they looked terrific. Macy Turley was amazing, and Alexis Purple played the best game I have ever seen her play. She was tremendous.
She really did, and the thing about it is, you take a look at her stat line, 18 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists, only 4 turnovers, played almost, I believe, almost every minute, nearly every minute, if not all of them, against Tennessee Tech. Do believe she played the 40, and quite frankly, didn't shoot her best basketball. Probably could have made a few more baskets, but just had to do a little bit of everything to keep them in that game, and did so. She broke presses. She dribbled and attacked the basketball. She took her defenders one-on-one and tried to slash to the cup. She was extremely effective, and I thought, in my eyes, really took that next leap as a potential slasher for Racer basketball. If she ever gets a consistent jump shot or even a three-pointer that can truly fall in the 30 to 35% range, she will have, I think, will have fully maximized and become, you know, become what she can be. Which is that true 3-and-D type player where she slashes and attacks the basket when defenders come up too close on her in man-to-man defense. I think she had a terrific game and against a terrific basketball team.
Yeah.
Tennessee Tech is very good. I know their 4-0 league start is not as hefty as people would think, but they are certainly in contention with the likes of Belmont and UT Martin to potentially come away with, you know, one of the top 2 seeds in the league this year. So, I mean, especially when you start 4-0. Now, obviously, SEMO would like to have a discussion of that. They've been playing fairly well and took a tough loss against Murray State. But, I mean, Tecia Thompson is Tecia Thompson. You know, I mean, she's extremely talented. They've got some help there as well. So, I mean, women's basketball is wide open. It is a brutal start for the Racer women, who, by the way, after they get done with this week, open with, you know, they get back at home with Belmont, you know, next week at 3:00 on Thursday, and the Racer men at 6:00, which, thank the presses. I'm thrilled that it's an earlier start for both games so I can get those stories in. But, you know, it's just not an easy start for women's basketball, you know, and they're having to play some of the tougher teams twice. They're going to have to play Belmont twice, you know, and they're going to play Tennessee State twice. Not ideal for a women's basketball team that's with all of its transfers in the offseason. So it'll be really interesting to see if they can somehow split this week. I think they still remain in the thick of things. But if you lose these two, you're 1-5. I'm not going to write the season off by any stretch of the imagination because you still got 12 conference games to go. But it's tough, you know, when you're trying to build morale and consistency and a winning culture when you lose 5 of your first 6 conference games. There's no way that that's easy. So we'll see how it goes.
Before I let you go, what about the Tennessee Titans? They're 1 win away from the Super Bowl with wins against New England and Baltimore on the road. Can they do it at Kansas City?
See, the thing about it is, Neil, they've already beat Kansas City this year. Now, granted, it was in Nashville, and granted, there were a lot of different things going on in that game that made that even – the game that it was. I mean, I think Pat Mahomes still threw for almost 450 yards in the loss, so it ended up being this crazy back-and-forth game. I just don't know how to bet against Derrick Henry right now. What he's doing in the last eight games has never been done in NFL history. He has the record now. He has the record for the best eight-game stretch for a running back in NFL history. He's run for over 1,200 yards just in that stretch alone. He's been unbelievable in the playoffs. And the crazy thing about it, Neil, is they've taken the ball out of the hands of a hot quarterback in Ryan Tannehill. You look at Tannehill's stats, he's thrown for less than 300 yards in the last two games combined. But what they've done is they've created an offense that has truly showcased what Derrick Henry is capable of. And I just think that that blows me away more than anything, is that they've walked into the playoffs. Tannehill has been completing 70% of his passes and have been one of the most efficient quarterbacks in all of football since taking over, you know, the Titans offense. And yet they put the ball in Derrick Henry's hands. Don't get me wrong, Derrick Henry was a key part of the season during, you know, the 16-game slate for the Titans. But to go into the playoffs and you're throwing the ball less than 20 times a game, it's not even – I can't even necessarily say that it's old smash-mouth football. I mean, it is because it's the running game, but it's not ground and pound. I mean, he's ripping off 10- and 15-yard carries and just slashing defenses. And I know some of that's coming on the fact that defenses are respecting Tannehill, and that's leaving Henry open. But I think what happened last week with Kansas City, them being down 24-0 and coming back and winning 51-31, they literally answered with 31 straight to take the lead. You know, that's insane. That's how prolific Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes' offense is this year. I think we could be in for another shootout between Kansas City and the Tennessee Titans, but I just don't. I mean, I said these things about Baltimore and New England. I just don't know. Like, how were you supposed to beat Tom Brady at Gillette? How are you supposed to beat Lamar in Baltimore? And it's been done now. So I guess I'm supposed to believe and say, yep, go ahead and beat Pat Mahomes, the rookie of the year from last season, and beat Kansas City in Kansas City, which the Titans have actually done within the last 4 years when they beat Alex Smith in Kansas City with Marcus Mariota. But I just don't know, man. Like, look at what Kansas City just did to the Texans. And I'm just afraid that maybe the Titans have run out of some mojo. But, hey, listen, Derrick Henry apparently can do no wrong. And if he puts up 180 yards and two touchdowns, I think Tennessee wins in Kansas City. If he doesn't do that, Pat Mahomes is going to the Super Bowl.
All right, Ed, I appreciate the visit. Be sure and tip your limo driver. He's done a good job letting you talk on the phone while he continues, to bring you back home. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. I wish I could afford a limo. That'd be awesome.
That would be great. All right, well, we'll see you in Martin Thursday night, and thanks for the show.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
That is Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun. We'll have Blake Brunet on tomorrow's show.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.